Lady at Phuket. And I've also had several helpful conversations over the last year or two with, there's probably not nearly a complete list, but Lou Wagner, Roy Meshulam, Andre Zouk, Nati Lanil also, and Larry Goose. So I think this is a subject that's developing and that we're sort of all learning as we go. So let me just say, without writing any definitions on the board, first, what an expander graph is, why they're of interest. So it's a sparse graph, meaning it has relatively few edges, but they're hard to disconnect. So you could think of it as a robust network. So think of a graph that's got bounded degree. So maybe it's three regular, four regular or something, and on a very large number of vertices, or even a sequence of graphs where the number of vertices is tending to infinity. But you'd have to remove quite a few edges to disconnect it. So that's one way in which people think of expanders, which we'll elaborate on. Another way to think of them is that they're graphs on which random walks mix quickly. So one can phrase this in terms of spectral gap of a certain matrix. So you, if you think about taking a random walk on a graph, you just sort of, if you're at a vertex, you could choose any of your neighbors, let's say, with equal probability, or maybe there's even weights on the edges. But if you were on a complete graph, then since you can get from any node to any other node, this very quickly, your random walk is mixed. After just two or three steps, you can't predict where you're going to be in the graph, and it's almost a uniform distribution over all the vertices. But those are dense graphs. Those have all of the possible edges. So there are sparse graphs for which random walks mix relatively quickly. And from the geometric point of view, expanders have found applications as examples of finite metric spaces which are hard to embed in Hilbert space or in any Euclidean space. And one can quantify that by saying that, talking about the distortion, the minimum distortion over all embeddings of the graph. So this is one of their main interests for metric geometry. So as far as I know, the existence of expanders was first demonstrated by Pinsker in the early 1970s, although he called them concentrators, and his applications were to computer science. And he pointed out that a well-chosen random graph has this sort of concentrator expander property with probability 1, basically, or with probability tending to 1 as the size of the graph goes to infinity. And it's had a long history since then, which I can't nearly do justice to in a few slides, but I'll just mention a few of the highlights. The first explicit examples of expanders, where one says not just randomly that they exist, but says, well, here's the vertices and here's the edges. And so what Margulis did was looked at Cayley graphs of certain groups. And basically, you look at some group like SL2Z and show that it has what's called Kasdan's property T, which I'll say a little bit more about later in the talk. And then he showed that all the quotients of this group, all these Cayley graphs have expansion properties. And another sort of deep number theoretic result is Lubovsky, Phillips, and Sarnak, using Deligne's proof of the Vey conjectures, gave even sort of better examples of the expanders, better in the sense that they have like sort of absolutely optimal spectral gap. And these graphs are still sort of the record holders for certain problems in extremal graph theory. If you sort of, if you want a graph with large girth and a certain degree and conditions, these, you can get pretty good with a probabilistic construction, but this is one of the examples in combinatorics where there's actually an explicit construction coming from algebra and number theory that does better than any probabilistic construction. And you know, continuing this idea of using groups, Cayley-graphs of groups, to get expanders, this has continued for decades. And a notable recent result was due to Briard, Green, and Tao, and they kind of completed the group, the proof that all finite simple groups have expanders. So if I take a finite simple group, there's some choice of generators for it, Cayley-graph, that has some nice, you know, expansion property. So let's say what expansion is exactly. So the Cheeger constant is usually defined like this. We'll look over all vertex sets S that are non-empty but are less than half the size of the graph. And the ES complement tells me the number of edges between S and its complement. So that's the size of the cut set associated with S, and then that's the size of the vertex set S itself. And we're taking the minimum over all vertex subsets less than half the size of the graph. So this number, this fraction on the right, of course, is the same if you substitute S over S complement, so it makes sense to restrict to just the vertex subsets less than half the size. Okay, so this number H is a graph invariant, and it's called the Cheeger constant for its analogy with the Cheeger constant for Riemannian manifolds, which has to do with, it's a measure of how easy the manifold is to cut into two disconnected pieces. So this is the sort of graph theoretic analog of Cheeger constant in Riemannian geometry. So that's one idea of expansion. If that Cheeger constant is big, then the graph is hard to disconnect. You would have to remove a lot of edges. So maybe you only have to remove a few edges to disconnect one vertex, but then this S in the small is small also. So this is sort of a, you're looking at the relative number of edges that you have to remove to disconnect vertex set S to the size of the set itself. So if that's, you know, large for all vertex sets, then we'd say the Cheeger constant is big and that the graph was as an expander. One other comment is, notice that H is greater than zero if and only if the graph is connected. So if the graph is disconnected, then I just take S to be one component of the graph, and then there's no edges between S and its complement. So then the Cheeger constant is zero, and the converse holds as well. So you could think of H being zero as saying that the graph is disconnected, and the further away from zero it is, the sort of more connected it is, the more robust the network. Okay, so we can also define a linear operator on functions on the vertex set. There's lots of different matrices that people are interested in associated with a graph. There's, of course, the adjacency matrix, and then there's even different Laplacians. There's normalized Laplacian is the one that I'm talking about here. And there's also what people sometimes call the combinatorial Laplacian. And you could really, in some sense, look at the spectral gap of any of those graphs. So I'm picking this one just since it's sort of my favorite. But it's a little confusing, actually, when you dig through the literature on expanders and find all these different matrices, all these different spectrums that they talk about. So here, we're just looking at functions on the vertices of the graph, and this is an operator on functions. So the Laplacian takes the identity operator, you know, just leaves the function alone, and then it subtracts the averaging operator. So just think, what does this do if at every vertex the function is equal to the mean on all its neighbors? So So that would be like the discrete analog of the mean value property. So in that case, the averaging operator would be the identity and the Laplacian would be zero. So you could think of discrete functions that have this mean value property as the analog of harmonic functions. Okay, and so we could look at the eigenvalues of this graph. It turns out, or of this matrix, it turns out they're all between 0 and 2. And there's always zero eigenvalue, and there's a zero eigenvalue for every connected component of the graph. So if it's connected, then the second eigenvalue is positive. So we'll define the spectral gap to be the smallest positive eigenvalue. So again, if lambda 2 is 0, then the graph is disconnected. That's if and only if. On the other hand, maybe the bigger lambda 2 is, that's some kind of measure of the more connected the graph is. So so we could think of it similar to the Cheeger constant. part of the yoga of expander graphs is that one often looks at a family of graphs rather than just a single graph. So if we have a sequence of graphs that are D regular, say, where every vertex has degree D in every graph, or even more generally, if they're bounded degree as the number of vertices goes to infinity, we could say it's an expander family if the Cheeger constant of that sequence is bounded away from zero. So it turns out it's equivalent to say that that second eigenvalue is bounded away from zero. I don't think it's obvious that those two are equivalent. There's actually a whole lot of inequalities that relate, this lambda 2 of the graph, say, with the Cheeger constant. So Cheeger and Bucer, I think, are generally given credit in the manifold case, and Tanner, Alon, Milman in the discrete case. But there's inequalities on sort of both sides. I won't write them up on the board, but if you know that lambda 2 is positive, then you know H is positive in some quantitative way, and vice versa. So if one's bounded away from zero, the other's bounded away from zero. Okay, so there's a lot of, I think, papers now that are, whether they phrase it in terms of higher dimensional expanders or not, that's really sort of what's going on in spirit. So the first paper that I was aware of in this, which sort of introduced me to higher dimensional expanders, was Nati Lanio and Roy Meshulam's paper on homological connectivity of random two complexes. So they're looking at random two-dimensional simplicial complex. And I'll just write on the board what this two complex is. So this has n vertices, it has n choose two edges, and each two-dimensional face appears with probability p. So this is a sort of two-dimensional analog of the Erdős-Rényi random graph, and that analogy can be made precise in various ways. So again, they have n vertices, and then it's a complete graph. Every vertex is connected to every other vertex with edges, so the random part comes in at the two-dimensional part. Each face comes in with probability p. Now, if p was zero, then you don't have any two-dimensional faces, so you've just got this one-dimensional complex and no two-dimensional faces, so it has a lot of H1. It has a lot of homology in degree 1. On the other hand, if p is 1, then you've got all those two-dimensional faces in there, and it's the two skeleton of the simplex, and then there's no H1. So so somewhere in between is where homology is first vanishing, and they gave a very precise statement about what that threshold is. There's a slide later in the talk that actually states the theorem, but it's an analog of the Erdős-Rényi threshold for connectivity of the random graph. So and their proof, it sort of looks very combinatorial. They have to do a lot of tricky combinatorics and counting and sort of use some hypergraph domination properties. But in spirit, it's actually very geometric. It's very much the higher dimensional analog of the Cheeger constant. So Gromov has also written about higher dimensional expanders a lot lately. He sometimes talks about algebraic isoperimetry. There's a couple papers he has in geometric and functional analysis titled Topology, Singularities, and Expanders. And one of the applications Gromov had in mind was this geometric overlap property, which says if you have a map from your from one of these complexes into Euclidean space, you have to there's a lot of faces that overlap in one point. So that's true for simplex, it turns out. That's a sort of celebrated theorem in discrete geometry. But they actually give examples of sparse simplicial complexes that still have this property, that even though they don't have too many faces, if you map them into Euclidean space, you've got a lot of one point that is in the image of a lot of faces all at once. And Uli Wagner does some beautiful recent work on these same random complexes and their d-dimensional generalizations, and showing that even when there's a very small number of faces, they don't embed in small dimensional Euclidean space. So this is sort of getting at what I was saying before about there's sort of this spirit and expander graphs of they're hard to embed. They have bad metric properties, or they have metric distortion properties. So this is sort of a discrete analog of that. I think this is also somewhat the spirit of Gromov and Goose proof that there exists knots of arbitrary large distortion. And I have to admit, I haven't read this paper. It looks somewhat technical, but in their abstract, they say this depends on expander-like properties of arithmetic hyperbolic manifolds. So I think actually, though, I was introduced to this idea probably by Lemion Meshulam's paper first, the ideas of higher dimensional expanders, at least in spirit, probably go back. Howard Garland has a paper in Annals of Math, I think it's like 1973, where he talks about p-adic curvature. And he wants some kind of discrete analog of curvature. What he wants to do is show that certain linear groups have vanishing group cohomology within a certain range to prove a conjecture of Serre's. And you can think of that as a topological fact. It's that certain cohomology groups vanish on this particular cell complex, and the cell complex is the building associated with the group. And the way he shows that these cohomology groups are zero is via p-adic curvature. But what that means is essentially that the links of certain faces in this complex are all sort of sufficiently high, that they're all sort of expanding. So he didn't use the terminology expansion, but a lot of the papers that are that have been written in the last few years on higher dimensional expanders and related things kind of reference Garland as an important seminal paper in the subject. Zook has done some really nice things on property T for discrete groups in general, and one of his interests was in random groups, and I'll mention one of his theorems later that we managed to make use of. Just like with random graphs, there's first, there was random constructions, but in the case of expander graphs, and then there was there's also harder to come by explicit examples with based on deep number theoretic facts. People have also done something like this, Ramanujan complexes they call them. I think Winnie Lee did it first. Lubotsky, Samuels, and Vishnu have also given examples of simplicial complexes that have sort of some optimal spectral gap over some set of operators. Okay, so that's the spirit of higher dimensional expanders, and that they've really, they have been around for a while. in one form or another. So let's suggest one possible definition, just trying to generalize the Cheeger constant definition for graphs. So we'll just rewrite the Cheeger constant definition here. But notice that if we think of the graph as a one-dimensional simplicial complex, the edges between S and S complement, that's just the co-boundary of the set S. So we think of the set of vertices S as a function from 0, 1, and it's 1 if the vertex is in the set and 0 if it's not. So if you take the co-boundary of that, then you get a collection of edges, and that's exactly ESS. And you're comparing that to the size of the vertex set that you started with. So there's one subtlety here, which is that I'm using norm here, and since we're talking about Z mod 2 coefficients, that's just the Hamming weight of the vector. But here, we need to look at X in the quotient norm. So we'll assume that X is minimal in its co-boundary class. What does that mean for a one-dimensional simplicial complex? If you're a zero co-chain in a one-dimensional complex, well, there's only one thing coming up from below with co-boundary, which is the co-boundary of the empty set, and that would be the set of all vertices. So if you take the minimum thing in its class, that's either the vertex set or its complement, whichever is smaller. So to me, this actually sheds light on why we need to actually restrict to S less than half the size of the graph, but it suggests a more general notion. So I should say that this definition appears exactly like this, basically, in Lenion Meshulam's paper. They look at the kth Cheeger number of a simplicial complex. So here I'm restricting to x's that are not themselves co-boundaries. So min x, so that the norm of x in its class and the quotient norm is not zero, and so this fraction makes sense. So here we mean this again with say Z mod 2 coefficients, and then it's a sort of combinatorial analog. It's the kth Cheeger number of a simplicial complex, and it's some rational number, depending on the complex, some combinatorial invariant of it. But once you write it like this, then that suggested you could measure the norm of the co-boundary of X and the norm of X in any situation that you want. And so the case R coefficients and L2 norm is especially attractive. For example, if you go back to the k equals 0, the graph case, that turns out to be an equivalent formulation for the spectral gap lambda 2. Is real coefficients now measured that in norm, L2 norm, and this in L2 norm, quotient norm, and then you get back to spectral gap. So this generalizes both the Cheeger number and the spectral gap of graphs. Okay, so thanks. Yeah, that's actually the square root of the spectral gap. Thanks. That's a good point. Okay. Okay, so Dominic Dotter and I looked at the various types of random simplicial complexes, including those that had been studied earlier by Lenion, Meshulam, and Wallach. It's really sort of following their definition of higher dimensional Cheeger numbers and actually the main idea of their proof as well. But we just wanted to point out the sort of geometric property of these random polyhedra, because the focus of the Lenion Meshulam and Meshulam-Wallach papers was to show that certain homology was vanishing. So there the focus was topological. So you can also see this geometrically. And the main result of this paper is that if we have a sort of dense expanding family, like a simplex, if you take the series of simplices on n vertices and then look at sort of random polyhedra, sub-polyhedra of those, that you'll get a relatively sparse expander family. Okay, so here's another way we could think about expanders for higher dimensional complexes, well, particularly for two-dimensional complexes. So people say a group have property T if whenever it acts, whenever it has a unitary representation, it has almost invariant vectors, then it has an invariant vector. Or you could say that the trivial representation is an isolated point in its unitary dual. So that, as I mentioned earlier, this has always been related to the idea of expanding graphs in the sense that groups that have property T provide expanding graphs. But now we want to think of Kasdan's property T for a two-dimensional simplicial complex. So here's a nice theorem of Zook. If I have a pure two-dimensional simplicial complex, pure dimensional means every vertex and every edge are contained in at least one two-dimensional face, and every vertex link is connected, and every vertex link also has spectral graph greater than 1/2, that's the normalized Laplacian that I was talking about earlier, then pi 1, the fundamental group of this complex, has property T. So let me say first, one analog of that, or one consequence of that, another topological consequence of that would be that H1 with real coefficients is vanishing, because a property T group has finite abelianization. So so if you abelianize pi 1, all you're left with is some torsion part. There's no free part. So so here's a similar theorem in higher dimensions if you just care about the homology. If you have a pure d-dimensional complex and the link of every d minus 2 face is connected and has spectral gap a little bit bigger, then you get cohomology with real coefficients there is vanishing. So this Baumann-Sliakowsky theorem, this is a special case of a theorem of theirs, which generalizes a theorem of Garland's. So this was some tools that we used in proving the following results. So we looked at the fundamental group of these random two complexes. Babson and Hoffman and I had looked at the fundamental group before, just trying to understand its vanishing threshold. But with Chris Hoffman and Elliot Paquette, we went back and tried to look at what's the threshold for property T. And it corresponds exactly with the threshold for homology vanishing of Lineal-Mechoulam. So here's the Lineal-Mechoulam theorem. So omega tends to infinity arbitrarily slowly. So think of omega as log, log, log n, or an inverse Ackermann function or something. If p is less than 2 log n minus omega over n, then there's almost always non-vanishing homology. And if p is bigger than 2 log n plus omega over n, then homology is always vanishing. So so their theorem is not only that 2 log n over n is the threshold function, but it's something about the sharpness, the width of the interval in which the phase transition happens is very small. So this is what people in random graph theory would call a sharp threshold in the sense of Friedgert and Kalai. So compare this to the theorem that I have with Hoffman and Paquette. So we get the same lower bound. In both cases, the p less than this case is easy because there's so in this case, there's isolated edges. And if there's isolated edges, because we have a complete graph, there has to be non-trivial homology. And here we have sort of a free part of the fundamental group coming from those same isolated edges. So then you don't have property T. So all the content of our theorem is here, that if P is just a little bit bigger than 2 log n over n, then we get property T. So we don't quite get it down to omega like Leon Mushulam did, but we get, you know, just a little bit bigger. So we need a square root log n, log n or something there. And this actually, in random graph terminology, this would still be a sharp threshold because this whole function here is still a little low of this function here. It still happens in a interval of width 0, you know, compared to where the actual threshold is. So so what we need to show is, for it to apply Zook's theorem, is that every vertex link is connected. Actually, that we almost don't have to show. That's a straightforward corollary of Leon-Mushulam's theorem. But what we, all our work is to show that every vertex link has a large spectral gap. And then we can apply Zook's theorem. And actually, we need new estimates and concentration results on the spectral gap of Erdős-Rényi random graphs. which is a very well-studied subject, spectral, you know, spectrum of random matrices of different kinds, a lot of people have done things on. And we thought, when we realized what was going on with Zook's criterion, that we would just look up the right definition for the right result in the literature for spectral gap of Erdős-Rényi random graphs. But none of the theorems said quite what we wanted to. So here's the sort of theorem that we write down. For concentration of spectral gap. So the k equals 0 case is of particular interest because that's the Erdős-Rényi random graph right past the connectivity threshold. So this graph has just barely become connected, and then the conclusion is that the spectral gap is not only bigger than 1/2, but it's bigger than 1 minus epsilon for any fixed epsilon. And we actually have a stronger statement than this about how epsilon, how fast epsilon tends to zero, and is one way in which it's a stronger statement. And the other way is that it's not just lambda 2, but all of lambda 2 to lambda n are between 1 minus epsilon and 1 plus epsilon. So other than that one zero eigenvalue, all the eigenvalues are clustered around 1, but almost as soon as the graph becomes connected. And so k equals 0 gives you the log n over n. There it's connected, but we need to add something to it to make sure that not only does every vertex have minimal degree 1, which is what you need to get it connected, but we need the minimum degree to be tending to infinity fast enough, which is not that fast, but it's something. So I managed to make use of this same theorem in another setting, which is random flag complex. So this is a different model of random simplicial complex. It's another generalization of Erdős-Rényi random graph to higher dimensions, if you like. So I'll tell you what XNP is. So this has, so you take the Erdős-Rényi random graph, which has n vertices and each edge has probability p independently, and then take the click complex of that, or the flag complex, which means the maximal simplicial complex compatible with that graph. So in other words, if there's a triangle in the graph, fill it in with a two-dimensional cell. And if there's, you know, a complete graph on 4 vertices, not only fill in all those two-dimensional cells for all those triangles, but fill in a tetrahedron three-dimensional cell on, you know, with those 4 vertices as its corners. That's why it's called the click complex, is the faces of the simplicial complex are exactly the clicks or complete subgraphs of the associated graphs. So one reason I like this measure on random simplicial complexes is that every simplicial complex is homeomorphic to some click complex or some flag complex by just barycentric subdivision. So this is putting a measure on quite a lot of topologies. And the basic result is that homology tries to be in just 1 degree. So part of the yoga with all of this that maybe I should have said earlier and I didn't is that, you know, P is the edge probability here or the face probability here, but it's too restrictive to just make P be a number. You want to let P be a function of M. You know, it's that maybe tends to zero at a certain rate as n goes to infinity. So something that I had suspected was true for a while, but wasn't sure how to prove, was that if p was between n sub minus 1 over k and n sub minus 1 over k plus 1, that that's the only way to get non-trivial k homology in degree k as n's going to infinity. And I had some results in this direction, but I wasn't able to get the sharp exponents. But when I started learning about the higher dimensional expanders, found that according to Baumann and Zweig-Kauskas theorem, just needed to check that sufficiently high dimensional skeleton of this complex is pure dimensional, which is straightforward, and then need to check that lengths of a bunch of faces are have big enough spectral gap. So something that these models have in common is that lengths of faces are again Erdős-Renyi random graphs or some kind of random complex. So this is part of the reason we need this constant. We need to not only know that the probability that the spectral gap is what we want it to be going to one, we need to have the probability of failure being very small, because we're going to take a union bound over polynomial in many faces. So here, in the case, in the two-dimensional lineal Mishulam model, we just need k equals 1 here, and then we get the probability of failure as little o n minus 1, which is just barely good enough because we're going over n vertex links. And here, but this theorem does kind of, we can make k bigger across the constant front, but it turns out the main thing to check is that all these links of faces are all connected. So we've got polynomially many Erdős-Renyi random graphs, check that they're all connected, and check that they all have big spectral gap, and we get the first part of this theorem. So that's the part that's new, that if we make P big enough, that a homology is vanishing. And then that turns out to be sharp, this the exponent and the constant in front of 1 plus k over 2, because I have this theorem down here. And this is a different technique. This is to show that there's non-trivial homology, I'll find spheres inside the complex which represent non-trivial homology classes. And the way you see that they're non-trivial classes is by finding a retract map onto them. So that argument works only for p in a certain interval. P has to be large enough that those spheres appear, which is the left side, and has to be small enough that that you can find actually a retract onto it. But I get lucky, and it turns out that this kind of sphere argument works pretty much all the way up to the point where the spectrum takes over, and the expansion of the links tells me that homology is vanishing. So again, this is sharp threshold in some sense, that the phase transition happens in a very narrow window. So omega again is any function that tends to infinity with n arbitrarily slowly. And in fact, actually in this theorem, I think I can just make omega a sufficiently large constant in every case. But it's a different constant here, and here. So rather than clutter up with C1, C2, and C3, I thought I'd try to just make omega tend to infinity. Okay, so here's actually a picture of a random flag complex on 100 vertices that Afra Zamarodian computed. So 100 vertices might not sound like a lot, but start thinking about how many faces this is as the edge probability gets bigger. So, and this is not just one complex, this is a series of complexes where we're adding one random edge at a time, and then when we add a new edge, we may add a lot of higher dimensional faces as well. So right here we have the number of connected components, and it turns out that, you know, it goes down to one, just as the Erdős-Renyi theorem predicts it does. But right as H0 is kind of fading out, H1, Betty, the dimension of one homology comes in, and there's only a short overlap where both Betty1 and Betty2 are non-zero. So in this model, each homology group seems to be rather than monotone in the underlying parameter, which in this case is edge probability, seems to be unimodal. And so now we have statements that are like that. One is that there's two phase transitions, one where homology becomes non-vanishing and one where it becomes vanishing again. And there's also some statements about expectation of the Betty numbers being sort of a unimodal function over a pretty wide threshold. So if you look really closely at these theorems, you can see that there's a very short overlap where there can be two non-trivial homology groups at the same time. So you could say that the homology is concentrated in one or at most 2 degrees for a pretty wide range of P. Okay, so I'll just advertise a few problems that are interesting to me. I still don't know, even having talked to a lot of people about this, Uli Wagner, who I think know more about it than I do, what are the right higher dimensional analogs of Cheeger and Bucer inequalities? Although Uli pointed out to me that there's some limit to what you can do with these. That there, one way you might want to generalize the Bucer inequality to higher dimensions fails. There's a counterexample. So I think this is the most fundamental thing about expanders on graphs. And so one of the first things we'd like to know about higher dimensional expanders is, if I know something about spectral gap, what can I say about combinatorial expansion or Z mod 2 coefficients? We don't know that. So, there's lots of ways we could formulate this. So I'm formulating it as open as I can. Pick your favorite operator, whichever Laplacian you want, boundary co-boundary plus co-boundary boundary, or if you want to do something with an averaging operator or something, and there's slightly different Laplacians, take spectral gap of one of those and relate it to Z mod 2 coefficients, for example. Okay, so another problem that seems to be quite open, that one of the first examples of expanders in the graph case was sort of K-regular graphs, or things that are very closely related to what we now have as K-regular graphs. But we still don't have a higher dimensional analog of these. And in these different kinds of simplicial complexes, we have to add sort of a lot of K plus one dimensional faces just to make sure that every K dimensional face gets covered at least once. So you have to kind of always throw in an extra logarithm term or something to make sure that that minimum degree gets up to one. And so it'd be nice to avoid that, to actually, and also the regular graphs, there's something sort of pretty about having every vertex having the same degree. So defining these would be nice. And something that I'm thinking about these days is this random complex of Lanier-Meshulam as sort of a random, as a stochastic process where we add each two-dimensional face one at a time. And if P is about 1 over N, then we get a free group. The fundamental group is free. And just a little bit bigger than that, about log N over N, we get a property T group by this result. Is Hoffman and Paquette. So what I'd like to know is, how does the random fundamental group evolve from free group to property T group? The motivation for this question is the evolution of the Erdős-Rényi random graph. At P equals 1 over N, a giant component appears, and then that giant component sort of gobbles up all the other components until log N over N, it becomes connected. But in that intermediate range, quite a lot is known about the number of trees, unicyclic, bicyclic components, about sort of topological things, as well as sort of geometric things like the diameter of the components and things like that. What is the structure of those trees? And so we don't know things nearly that refined for the random fundamental group, but the kind of theorem I'd like to see is that pi 1 in this intermediate range has a free product decomposition, and that there's a giant component in that free product decomposition of the group that is a T group or close to a T group. So since the theme of this workshop is computational topology and applications of topology, I'll mention a few applications that I could imagine for higher dimensional complexes from my last slide. So Batson-Spielman and Srivastava Srivastava have some beautiful results on sparsification of graphs. So the idea is, given a graph, an arbitrary graph, I can find a graph on the same vertex set with far fewer edges, and that has that has almost the same spectrum as the graph that you started with. So a more precise statement would be, if I want to measure the distance from the new spectrum to the old spectrum, I can get it less than epsilon, and I only need some constant times the number of vertices for the number of edges. So these are sparse graphs, so they only need linearly many edges, and they can sort of make the spectrum look like whatever they want it to. And the way they make the spectrum look like whatever graph they want to is to sort of push the spectrum around with expander graphs. They glue together a bunch of expander graphs and do some, you know, very clever, very hands-on combinatorics and linear algebra to get sort of from a big spectral gap to an arbitrary spectrum. And I think this is one of the things that Spielman won the Nevin-Lena Prize for. So I think this could be very useful in computational topology. If we're given some arbitrary simplicial complex, and the whatever topological or geometric properties we're interested in can be approximated by a simplicial complex with far fewer faces, that could be significant. So another question that I've had in mind, so De Silva and Greist have this sort of celebrated result about homological sensor networks, that just detecting the homology class will tell you whether or not your sensor networks cover the given region. And I wonder if we can extend that by looking at this sort of higher Laplacian. So in other words, if you have small positive eigenvalues, you're getting close to a zero eigenvalue and you're in danger of not covering your region anymore. And on the other hand, if your sensor network is expanding and you have a big spectral gap, then maybe that means you have robust coverage, so that even if a small number of sensors fail, you're still covered. So that seems like a very intuitively clear idea, but as far as I know, no one has written anything down to make this idea quantitative. And finally, I think mixing of Markov chains is a huge subject on graphs, and I think we're not even beginning to understand how to do this on simplicial complexes. But if you have a large spectral gap, we're sure that the Markov chain will converge fast. So one kind of Markov chain that I have seen people study, and they wanted to know something about the dynamics, was to send a form to the form plus Laplacian on that form, and just sort of iterate that. So so this should converge to some kind of harmonic form, because if LF is zero, then it's harmonic. And so then the stable points of this, if there's a stable attractor, it should be a harmonic form. How fast you get a harmonic form this way, you know, depends on exactly on the spectrum of this Laplacian. Okay, so that's all I had. Thanks for your time and attention. We do, and in fact, I had those results before, that the expectation of the Betty number was zero, or close to zero, outside of a certain range, and that I know what the expected value is in the intermediate range. That was part of my PhD thesis. The expectation of the Betty number is actually much easier to get your hands on. You can write like a one-line proof to get the expectation by just looking at the dimensions of, by looking at the number of k-dimensional faces. In this intermediate range, the number of k-dimensional faces dwarfs the number of k-1, k-plus-1 dimensional faces, so there has to be homology in hk, and it's got to be roughly the same size as fk. But a more refined version of that argument, Elizabeth Meckes and I did, and we could actually show that the Betty numbers in this intermediate range have limiting Poisson or normal distributions. As the number of vertices goes to infinity, we know not only the expectation and the variance of the betting number, but we know that if you renormalize it, that it's normal distribution. So we know a lot about the betting numbers now, for at least for this case. No, that's a good question. One natural case that I know, for example, Dominic Dutter has been thinking about is the case of a cube, subgraphs of that. And the case of the connectivity threshold for subgraphs of the cube it's subtle, it's harder than the Erdős-Rényi theorem, but that was done by Burton like 30 years ago, and then Erdős and Spencer wrote some things about it. And Dominic has been working on a higher dimensional analog of that. One thing that we do say in our paper about co-boundary expanders is that we give a few other examples of dense polyhedra, like instead of simplex, you could look at cross polytope or something, and we take random subcomplexes of those and show homology is vanishing and that they're expanding. But there's only a few examples of. No, not completely arbitrary. And that's a big subject, I think, in random graph theory, is give a sequence of graphs rather than complete, just whatever you want, and take random subgraphs of those. And I haven't seen that much with random complex. We just give a few examples in our paper. Now that's a great question. There is a notion of filtration here. All these random complexes are actually random filtrations of the simplex or of some complex that we understand, because you can think of it as adding the faces one level at a time. So so I guess the short answer is no. Nobody has written anything down about the persistence. The feeling should be that certainly the persistence can't be any longer than the width of this interval, but that I think there will be classes that persist over the whole interval, but I don't know. To make this more quantitative and more precise seems to be an open problem, and I think I've sort of advertised that I think that would be of interest for topological data analysis. You know, what we really want is persistent homology results for random complexes. So. Sorry, can you say the question again? You want to talk about points in space rather than abstract simplicial complexes? Right. So there are some things written about random geometric complexes where you take like n points in space and then connect them just if they're within some threshold radius, which is a very special case of what you're saying, where the probability depends on distance. We'll just say it's one if it's within the sphere and zero otherwise, and then say build the Viatoris Rips or Chek complex. So a lot of things are known about homology of those, but and they seem to not be expanders in the same way that these are, sort of because of the underlying geometry. But again, we don't know anything about the nobody has written anything down for the persistent homology of those. And then they were just very, the cases I know of that were studied were special cases, you know, where you put down IID points in Euclidean space, you know, according to some distribution, maybe like uniform on a convex body or something like that. But so it seems like a natural question to do that on a manifold, for example.
If there's no more questions, let's reconvene in 25 minutes. Thank you.